and a pleasant good afternoon to you. It is time for another local candidate forum, this one featuring the candidates for the Minnesota Senate from District 27, incumbent Democrat Dan Sparks and Republican challenger Gene Dornick here on this Wednesday afternoon, the first of two forums to be held here this afternoon. Just a short while, we'll be having with us the representative or the contestants in the State District 27B race in just a short while, and that is Democratic incumbent Gene Poppe and Republican challenger Patricia Mueller in just a short while. But again, also streaming worldwide here at myawesomeminnesota.com today. This forum being held in conjunction with the Austin Area Chamber of Commerce, and the candidates will be given a chance to make an opening statement here in just a short while, followed by questions that have been submitted by the chamber. The candidates will have a maximum of 2 minutes to answer those questions, and at the end of the forum, they will also have a chance to deliver a closing statement here this afternoon. So we'll get right into it. Gentlemen, first off, thank you so much for being with us on this beautiful day here today. Yes. And but first off, we'll start with Senator Dan Sparks. And again, thanks for being with us, Dan, and your opening statements here this afternoon, please.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jason, and to KAUS for having this opportunity today to have this discussion. It's very important. Also want to thank the Austin Chamber of Commerce for hosting this. I know that we're in kind of different times right now, but to be able to have a debate and get to talk about the differences between the two candidates is so important. You know, my name is State Senator Dan Sparks. It's been my honor and privilege to serve this district. I consider myself to have done a very good job. I've worked hard along party with both parties to make sure that we get things done in St. Paul. I'm very happy with that track record, but we know every election cycle is different. So having said that, I think I'm the right choice, the right candidate for this time. I think obviously we're in some difficult times. We're going to be facing some very challenging situations going forward. So I think now more than ever, it's important to have a strong, independent voice that has proven results to continue to represent this district. Having said that, I've been a strong supporter of the ag sector. I've obviously been supported by business and labor in the past. And so I think, again, that's very important moving forward, that we have people that are willing to work together, go up there and roll our sleeves and really get things done for the good of this community. So with that, I just thank you guys for the opportunity to be here today to answer some questions and be able to have a nice discussion with you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Sparks. And Mr. Dornick, your opening statement here this afternoon.
Yes, I appreciate the KUES doing this, and Chamber, thank you very much. And I, too, enjoy the debate discussion to get the voters more informed. So I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I've been married for 35 years to Vicky. We have 12 children, 8 girls and 4 boys. I grew up on a dairy farm. We not only farmed, or not only did dairy, we did beef cattle. We raised up 100 beef cattle and also farmed about 450 acres back in the 70s, which was a very large farm. So strong background in farming. Went to Austin Vocational School right here in Austin and went through the two-year program. Graduated from that, got into residential carpentry for a couple years. Started having, needed some more. As we had children, we needed a more secure job and some benefits. So I joined the local carpenter union in Rochester, 1382, went through the apprenticeship program there. Great program. You work during the day and you do night school twice a week. Got my journeyman card, worked, retired there, loved the work. 2009 rolled around, tough economy, a lot of people lost their jobs, and I was one of those. Mm-hmm. So 12 kids at home, can't fail. I've got to go out and use the gifts and talents I learned from vocational school and on the job at the union. And so we started a family business. And that's what we continue yet today is 11 years later, still doing that. And with the reason I'm running, I think my slogan is, it's time for a citizen, not a career politician. When I say citizen, it's more just a working class guy. The guys that and gals that work and get up every day and know what's going on in the workforce. So that's part of the reason, and being a stronger voice there with common sense and bringing stronger voice to stand up for some of those policies that are kind of extreme. So look forward to more discussion. I see that my time is done, so thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dornick, and we'll get right into the issues here this afternoon. We'll go back to Senator Sparks here. And Dan, I guess the first question that we've had submitted here, what are some of the district's current infrastructure needs? There are many, I'm sure, but what are some that kind of stand out to you that if elected, that you'd obviously keep working on?
Absolutely. Great question, Jason. And we've worked hard in the past. Obviously, you know, we have to go further. But we've been very successful in past years passing bonding bills and getting a lot of the infrastructure needs for our local communities. We could go back to that list, but I think we really want to focus on the future and moving forward. But having said that, obviously, roads and bridges are very important. I think that's why it was a major disappointment that to this point, we still have not been able to get a bonding bill passed this legislative session. There's blame to go around on both sides, but obviously, that's a big deal. The other one locally for the Austin economy, obviously, is going to be the wastewater treatment plant. We had a nice amount of money set aside for that in the bonding bill. If that's not be able to happen, it's really going to put a huge burden on our local taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And so that's something, too, that we need to continue to fight for. We've done a great job in the past with some of our flood hazard mitigation. I think that that's why we really stand out in St. Paul is because we've been proven stewards of those dollars. We take those dollars. We have local matches, and we do a lot of wonderful things with that. And so I think that that's kind of where we're at right now. Obviously, on the Albert Lee side, they, too, have some projects that they would like to see moving forward. And so I think I'm hopeful that we can still get that done, but it's so important. And every year that we get further behind, Austin's not unusual in this. When we travel around the state with the bonding committee, we see it in all of our smaller communities too. Mm-hmm. We have an aging infrastructure that needs to be updated, but we just don't have the tax base or the capacity to spread it around. So I think that's kind of where our infrastructure needs are. I'll continue to fight for that. Like I said, we've been successful in the past, but we have to continue to look out the front mirror and make sure that we can get even more things done. Sure. And I'm glad to go back and continue fighting for those.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Sparks. And Mr. Dornick, same question to you here this afternoon. What are some of the district's current infrastructure needs that you see them and that you would pursue if you were elected here in November?
Yeah, and I have to agree with the senator. Infrastructure is needed to be, this is the way the bonding bills support that infrastructure that we need throughout the state. And it's very important for these smaller communities that can't afford it. Like he said, the issues that obviously the wastewater treatment plant here in Austin is huge. I'm a homeowner here in Austin too. I have properties and keep track of the taxes being paid. And so I'm definitely excited about that, and hopefully we can get it done. I'm disappointed that it hasn't been done this time. Other issues in Albert Lee, the flood mitigation, the trunk highway 65, which floods when you get large rains, that needs to be addressed, and that's in the current bonding bill. The Blazing Star Trail is another one that's been waiting for a long time. That's in the one that I read anyways. And they also new programs for townships, roads. There's some money in that throughout the states helping some of those smaller townships support some of the things that they needed. And lastly, the regional area, the airport in Rochester, which helps more regional, not in our district. So those are some of the big ones that are in it this year. And I will, I'm involved in the chambers in both Albert Lee and Austin, so, and have properties in both communities. And so I'll keep abreast with the mayors and the people that are in the know and being able to communicate with those people to be kind of the head of the game and knowing what's coming up. And also, if I'm elected, I'll work very hard with Senator Senjum to draw attention to the needs in districts of 27 and to be a strong voice for that funding that our communities need. And like I said before, just being continually involved, listening to the needs of the people and to the local towns, Wells, and just some of the other communities that also have needs.
All right. Next question will stay with you to start here, Mr. Dornick. COVID-19, of course, has been really tough on many businesses, and not only in District 27, but, of course, all around the state. And if you were elected, how could you help our businesses locally?
Yeah, it's a great question. COVID-19 has been so hard on all of the country, but in Minnesota here with the businesses, the farmers, and people that have lost loved ones. It's just been a terrible pandemic, and we're trying to work through it. So no easy answers. We're going to have to work together. Going to have to be able to make some tough choices. And I think one of the biggest things that I want to say first, though, is that the Governor Walz, I think he did a great job the first 60 days in taking it by the horns. And, you know, we were in emergency. We didn't know what we were facing. And I thought he did a good job of just, hey, this is what we've got to do. We've got to shut down. We've got to figure out what's going on, and being effective in keeping the cases down low enough so we didn't overrun the hospitals and our medical facilities. So I think he did a good job there. Moving forward, I was a little disappointed. I think we have great legislators, both in the House and the Senate, and I think that we needed we need more voices. That's the voice of the people. Those are the people that were elected, and I think their voice has kind of been silenced through this. And I'd really like to see that as one of the things that we need to do is help businesses. We need more options. We need more information from the people, and then the legislators, the people that we elected, helping us mm-hmm. work through this, because it's not going to be solved quickly. It's going to take some time. And secondly, it's the one-size-fits-all is just not working. Minneapolis-St. Paul is a big community. We're smaller here. There's some places in northern Minnesota that have had, I think, zero or very few cases. And then just blanking all the rural areas and the smaller communities with the same mandates and all those things. I think we need to trust some of the local mm-hmm. businesses in control to do business safely. Of course, we want to do it safely. And nobody wants anyone hurt. So we just mm-hmm. need to continue to work safely and come up with some ideas on how to do that effectively.
All right, thank you. Mr. Dornick, Senator Sparks, same question to you. Again, of course, as you well know, COVID-19 has been very tough on many businesses here in District 27. How would you continue to help our businesses locally if you're reelected in November?
Couldn't agree with you more, Jason. I mean, we've never seen a healthcare crisis like this in our state or in our country, in our world ever. So, I mean, I really want to give hats off to all those small business owners who have worked extremely hard. I know that there's been a lot of frustration. I've talked with many of them, and I just want to make sure to tell them that we appreciate how hard they're working and what they're doing. I, too, was very disappointed, I believe, in some of the discrimination that happened at first with allowing some of the bigger box stores to remain open, but not some of our smaller businesses on Main Street, who really are what we are here in, you know, smaller rural Minnesota. And so a lot of times I would talk to those people, take their advice, and say, okay, give me a plan. We can give this to the governor and talk to him if it makes sense. And in many cases, we did run it up the governor and the administration's team, and we were able to make some movement, maybe not as soon as everyone wanted, but certainly we were able to get campgrounds reopened, restaurants, mm-hmm. some gymnasiums and workout places, and so I think that's important. In fact, you know, we talk about sometimes having to break away from our party, and I'm not afraid to do that. I never have been. Again, I talked about it in my opening statement. I'm an independent voice, and so during one of the special sessions, I even had to break away from the governor because I believed it was the right thing to do, and I voted in favor of allowing those businesses to reopen. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important to remember. And I've been a champion and worked hard with the emergency small business grants and loans entered that the legislature had to try to help these folks. And again, I would just say all the credit in the world goes out to our small business owners, because some of them, instead of kind of taking it and feeling sorry for themselves, have really turned this into a different opportunity and have even seen sales increase. So, you know, the other thing is, I think more than ever now, we need to continue to have state and county people work together, make the right decisions so that we can all move forward, do the things that are best for all of us, because government can work, but it only works when we all work together.
Yeah, all right. Next question will stay with you here, Mr. Sparks, that because we were just talking about COVID-19, and that's largely to or is the cause for a nearly $5 billion budget shortfall for next year for the state of Minnesota. I guess basically if reelected, how would you help to plan to budget with that? It was mentioned a shortfall of nearly $5 billion.
Great question, and I think we all have to be realistic about this, too. You know, going into this, thank gosh, we had our reserves built up, and we were able to spend those down. We were able to get some help from the feds on the COVID relief, and obviously it took us a long time, but eventually we were able to get those funds back down to our local cities and counties. Having said that, during my time in the Senate, the state has faced deficits even bigger than this in my time in the Senate, and it wasn't easy, but we managed it and we overcame it. The job won't get done by playing politics or pointing fingers. Again, it's going to have to be both Democrats and Republicans working together, rolling up our sleeves, and there's not going to be any easy answers. We know that as we come out of this, our tax returns are going to be down, income for the state is going to be down, and there's going to have to be a lot of tough decisions to be made. But again, I would go back to that I think it's going to take experience and committed leaders with a strong track record to see Minnesota through this. It's not anything different that we do every budget cycle, Jason. Mm-hmm. When we go up there, we go through each part of the budget, and we need to make sure that we have our priorities and decide where we are going to spend those dollars. And so we've been through, like I said, you know, under both administrations, a $6 billion deficit, and we came back out of it. And a few years later, we had a big surplus. But again, it's not going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of dedication, a lot of hard work. There's going to be some people that are going to have to suffer through it. But again, we've done it in the past. We'll do it again.
All right. All right, thank you, Senator Sparks. Mr. Dornick, same question to you. If you would be elected in November, how would you help to plan to budget that with that, again, nearly $5 billion budget shortfall for next year?
You know, a lot of people are facing that right now that lost their jobs. It's kind of the same principles, but on a much smaller scale. You know, people losing their houses or losing their jobs and having to do the hard things, and that's what's going to have to be done. We're going to have to separate needs from wants. We're going to have to prioritize. We're going to have to budget. And that's going to take, like you said, working together. I think one thing we need to do is we need to tighten up the belt on government. All of us have tightened our belt up and separate some of those needs and wants and prioritize. So with the state agencies, DHS and CCAP losing $100 million, and I think that's not chump change. That's a lot of money that we need to be more careful with. That's a taxpayer's money that's being lost. So with that, I think that's the first place we start, is getting government more under transparent and accountability there. Instead of losing that money, we can tighten that up. And then secondly, I think that, another thing that was done that I didn't agree with was the state employees got raises, and I'm all for state employees. I know they work hard and stuff, but when there's lots of people in this state losing their jobs, I think that wasn't a wise decision to give them raises. So that's, it's going to be some hard choices, and everybody's going to have to kind of work together to get through this. It's not going to be solved quickly. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some hard decisions, and people are going to have to work together to get through this. And finally, I guess I want to say we definitely need to preserve some things. And I think the K through 12 education is one that we need to. And then disabilities, nursing home funding, we need to keep those. And then some of the other things we're going to have to work on, doing some of those hard decisions. We're not going to tax our way out of this problem.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dornick. And we'll stay with you here for our next question. Trying to hit some different topics here. We'll move on to agriculture. And I know a lot of the issues affecting our farmers here in Minnesota obviously are on that can be or have to be dealt with on a national level, low grain prices and things of that sort. But I guess, if you are elected, what were some of the things that you would do for our farmers here in District 27?
Well, the first thing we still need to do is get Section 179 passed, so there's a conformity for the tax from the federal, and that has been a real frustrating thing that needs to be accomplished and done. Some of the other things is the property tax. We've made great gains in property tax through the few sessions ago, a few years ago with toning down the property tax. So I want to make sure that stays for when they have bond or school bonds and school referendums. Keeping the tax base more uniform, where it was really difficult for the farmers to keep up with that when there was a school, they were affected by their by the taxes and paying a lot of it. So continue to stand up for that and not let that change. And some of the other thing is we just really need to support, the low prices, we can't, they need a fair price for their product. And just with the other things that we can help them with is, I think, there again, fair, mm-hmm. for the, well, I think they're going to have a better crop this year. It's going to be really good. So they're going to be able to. With a larger crop, and then hopefully the prices will continue to come up, and then continue to support the smaller communities.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Mr. Dornick. And Senator Sparks, I guess same question to you. Like I just mentioned, here in agriculture, a lot of the issues affecting our farmers here in District 27 and the state have to be dealt with on a not only a national but probably a global level. But what are some of the causes that you would champion or continue to champion for our farmers here in District 27 if you're reelected in November?
Certainly, Jason. And we realize that agriculture is a huge part of not only this area, but obviously the entire state. I mean, agriculture really drives us. And, it was it was interesting to see, you know, when all the breakouts came out in the meatpacking plants, like how serious this stuff can really be. I mean, it really takes a lot of people mm-hmm. in a lot of areas to move that food. And, you know, if you talk about people getting a little excited if they can't get a roll of toilet paper, if you can't buy your local mm-hmm. pork chop or some food at the Hy-Vee grocery store. And we did see for a while that there was rations put on that. So having said that, I've stayed very involved in the agriculture community. You know, I go out for the past several years and still get in the tractor and drive. I really enjoy it. It kind of helps us. And I think it really helps me get a different perspective, too, because you're there doing the work and you see the challenges that these guys go through. They work so hard. They're good stewards of the land. But they just need that. And all they ask for is just a fair market price. And so I think to that extent, I have been and will continue to be a champion for the ethanol industry. You know, we're at E12 right now. We're mm-hmm. talking about perhaps going to E15. I think also that farmers understand that they want to be good stewards of the land, but at the same time, we don't want to have added regulations that are put on them, and I think that we can continue to do that. My opponent obviously talked about Section 179. I've been a co-author, a chief author. We're ready to go. We had that bill all teed up, and again, unfortunately, politics came into play, but that doesn't mean we're going to stop working on that. And last but not least, I think now more than ever, too, that you do see some of the challenges that these farmers go through with lower commodity prices and the challenges that they face is that I worked hard along with many of my colleagues to work on mental health issues to make sure that those people do have an outlet or someplace or someone that they can talk to when they're trying to renew their line of credits or have all that stress on them. That's a difficult spot for many of those people to do. And in addition, we've also worked very hard to try to help young farmers come into the system because, as we know, mm-hmm. this farming community is getting much older. So anything we can do to promote young farmers getting into the industry, we're totally supportive of that.
Sure. All right, moving on here to another subject, this one being healthcare, and we'll stay with you here, Senator Sparks. We had our question submitted here that someone is asking that looking at the Affordable Care Act, would you have any firsthand experiences regarding enrollments?
Absolutely. I don't know where that came from, but in all seriousness, I mean, healthcare is a huge issue in this district. When you walk around, I mean, obviously, that's probably one of the other than the economy. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we've heard, and not only this year. So there's no silver bullet. But to that extent, you know, I've been a member of the Commerce Committee for several years in the Minnesota Senate, and I really thought that I understood insurance. I'll tell you what, I had no idea what insurance was until I went back to school a few years ago and received my health and life insurance. Mm-hmm. And for the past several years, I've been selling health insurance here in Austin. And it's amazing to see what has happened and the prices that we have in that. To that extent, we've done some things, even in the Minnesota Senate, to help reduce those costs. We've worked hard to bring down prescription drug prices. I think this last session you saw that we fought and fought and fought, and finally we were able to get insulin down to a decent rate. Mm-hmm. We started to bring in some of the pharmacy benefits managers and have them talk about why our costs are so much more expensive than prescription drugs in other areas. And it wasn't probably the most popular thing, again, with my party, but I had to break away because I did realize that the reinsurance bill did save money. You could argue mm-hmm. that maybe you didn't want that money to go to some larger health insurance companies, but the facts were there to me that it's helped to drive down costs. Mm-hmm. And the MinSure system, obviously, it's gotten better and better over the years. Those people that work hard every day to try to afford health insurance, if it wasn't for those tax credits, there's no way they could afford it. Even with those tax credits, mm-hmm. it's still very, very expensive. Yeah. So we have more work to do, obviously, like for the self-employed, and as our aging population continues to work on that. But again, I think that healthcare is not going away, and we just need to keep on working hard on it to make sure that we can make it affordable and have access is the other important thing, certainly in rural Minnesota.
Yeah. All right. And Mr. Dornick, it's the same question to you here. Looking at the Affordable Care Act, that if you would be elected, would you have any firsthand experience regarding enrollments?
You know, Minnesota has always taken really good care of the health care. They had one of the best systems in 2010 before the Affordable Care Act came, and pre-existing conditions are covered. We had one of the best health care systems in the country. And then in 2013, I believe it was, the Affordable Act came through. And it just, I think it was a great idea, but it just didn't work out. So, and they had, it ended up causing a lot of higher premiums, high deductibles. And now we're trying to fix some of those. And there is no easy fix. We're going to continue to work forward. And I think there's much more work that needs to be done in St. Paul. Mm-hmm. They've fixed some of the things. The reinsurance is just a buy down to offset the cost so that the insurance companies can still be in there. We need to have the private sector do insurance, and I think the state needs to just continue to work with that to come up with more solutions to solve the problem. So to make it accessible, affordable, is continue to move forward to that, and I think they have started that and continue to work through that. There's going to be some more work that needs to be done to solve the problem, not just to put a Band-Aid over it, kind of what they did with the reinsurance. So I look forward to working with that. Now, there's the philosophy is smaller government, limited government, and to be able to let the free market system set more and being making it so we can go across county line or state lines and make it more competitive too. And I think those are some of the answers that haven't been talked about, but they haven't moved forward yet. Mm-hmm. So again, there's just more things that need to be done yet, but we're moving in the right direction.
All right. One final question is, again, we move on to another topic, this one being education. And Mr. Dornick, we'll stay with you. Do you believe Minnesota's Safe Learning Plan for this school year is an effective response to addressing educational concerns during this pandemic?
Oh, that's a great question, and it's remains to be seen. Yeah, but I've talked to some superintendents, and I know they were excited to get back to school, and the kids and the are excited, and the parents are excited. Also, the little frustration was from the teachers and the superintendent I talked to was the scope of the direction that the government was given. He told me it was 130-some pages, so very difficult to implement. It was a little frustrating, but I think they're doing a great job. I think our teachers and a local teachers are local school board members and parents are really excited, and they're cautious, but they're excited that their kids are going back to school and doing it safely is the main goal. So I think more needs to be done, and I think we'll learn more as we continue to go through this. All of us don't, or we hope there's not a big flare-up, so we're kind of moving cautiously to see how things work, and I think that's one thing that we'll do is we'll slowly adapt and adjust as we learn more as we continue on through the school year. But there again, it's the main thing is to keep the students safe and teachers safe, and to continue to educate our students. And Minnesota has always been the leader in education, and I'm just proud of the schools, and I think they'll do a great job. I'm not I'll just say that I'm grateful for how it's working so far. I just talked to a teacher just yesterday, I guess, and things are they're different in how they're doing it. Some are doing hybrid classes, and some are doing that they're there in the classroom. And so I think we'll work it out. I think it'll just continue to get better as we learn step by step going through the process as we things change.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dornick. And Senator Sparks, same question to you. Here, do you believe Minnesota's Safe Learning Plan for this school year is an effective response to addressing educational concerns during this pandemic?
I sure do, and I think it was a difficult decision, and I know that some of the districts had to kind of line up their different plans and were kind of waiting, but I think as we watched the science and allowed the governor to kind of watch that, obviously he's a former educator, and I think we're certainly moving in the right direction. I can tell you this, Jason, that last March when this all came down and we found out that we were going to do a remote learning with my second grader, it was very challenging, and I'm not the only parent that I've heard that from. I've heard it from many, and so obviously I have a whole new appreciation for teachers and what they do, and obviously there's a reason why we want our kids in those classrooms. But at the end of the day, our children's safety and those teachers' safety and the custodian safety has to be our number one issue. So I would argue that the governor didn't have just one plan. He had three different plans that are, especially around the state, we can talk to it. I know that we had concerns from some of the smaller districts like Grand Meadow that felt that they could open up, and I agreed with them. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some of the smaller districts are going live. There's a combination, even if you look in the areas that we represent, Austin and Albert lately are bigger districts. They have little different challenges of trying to spread those kids out, and they have just more children, so they're doing remote. In the middle schools, we're doing some hybrid. And so obviously, you know, time will tell. We're hopeful that they've been very cautious, and I think that we're moving in the right direction. So I'm certainly hopeful. I think that our kids do a good job when they're there. We have some of the best teachers in the state, some of the best schools in the state. I'll put our schools up against any metro school or any suburban school in the state of Minnesota. But at the end of the day, I think that really the safety of our children and the people that work inside those schools has to be our number one priority, even the bus drivers. I mean, it goes all the way from start to finish. So thank you.
You bet. All right. Well, we reached the point of this forum here that we'll move on to closing statements. And Senator Sparks, if you would be so kind to give us your closing remarks here this afternoon.
Perfect. Just thanks again, Jason, and to KES Radio for this opportunity to visit with you guys this afternoon. Obviously, to the Austin Chamber of Commerce for hosting the event. I know it's been a challenging time for all of us. But having said that, again, like I said, it's been my honor and privilege to represent this district. I think I do a good job. You know, my entire career, I've made a point of being able to work not only with Democrats, Republicans, Independents. I think most of you that know me, too, know that I have a very open-door policy. You may not always love the way I vote, but I guarantee you that I'll listen to both sides of the story. I'll weigh the debate and try to do the thing that I think is the best and the best for the most of the constituents of the people that I represent. There's no way I'm going to change that. There's no way I ever would change that. And so that's who I am. And I think now more than ever, we need that in politics, because unfortunately you see kind of the Washington politics kind of pouring in even to this campaign and this race. And so it'll be interesting to see. I've heard from a lot of people that are very upset and kind of disgusted with some of the things that are happening. But time will tell. We have less than 2 months to an election that's going to be very heated, but I think that events like this are very important for us to talk about the things that we represent, the things that we believe, the things that we've gotten done, and the things that will continue to get done. So again, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here, and look forward to visiting with more people as we move into September and October.
All right. And Mr. Dornick, your closing statement here this afternoon.
Yeah, I want to thank you too, Jason, and the radio station here in Chamber. So we definitely are in difficult times here. And I just want to say that I've been a bridge builder working with all different types of people. And I think working with union labor and the background in agriculture, that I think I bring a different voice and a strong voice of common sense and change. I need some fresh energy and new ideas. And as we talk here, there's not a lot of difference between us. I think that both the senator and I agree on a lot of things. But the most important vote that we make is who we choose for leader and leadership. And the party or team Sparks or Team Dornick, whichever we pick to run our team, or it sets the agenda. So the majority leader is very important, and that vote is the most important vote that we make, because they set the agenda. And so the agenda for the party, the team that the senator on, is many times goes different ways than him, and he has to buck the system. So I believe that we need to be able to work with our district and bring that stronger voice of not raising taxes going back to 2013, when the Democrats or that team had control of the Senate, the House, and the governorship. They raised taxes by $2.3 billion in a surplus year. So who do we want running the purse strings or being in control of this recovery? I think we need to be careful with what the money and we can't tax our way out, like I said earlier. We need to have options, choices, and being able to bring those ideas instead of just taxing. And so I think it's important to have the leadership of a new voice, fresh energy. And I'll close with thank you so much for the time and the opportunity.
All right. Mr. Sparks, would you care to respond to the, as mentioned, talking about the taxes, or?
Well, actually, you know, after 18 years, I'm sure you can go back and try to find some votes that we've taken in the past. But again, I just said it's going to take strong leadership. You know, we've raised taxes, we've cut taxes. You know, we can go back and have those discussions. But, you know, even to your earlier question about what's it going to take to, you know, solve that $5 billion deficit, I never said raise taxes.
Well, gentlemen, again, thank you so much both for being with us here.